Hey there, this is Seth Juarez coming to you from the Washington State Convention Center here at Channel 9 with the honorable and distinguished Chris Hellman. How are you doing, my friend?
Oh, I didn't know how to be honorable and distinguished today, but I'm trying my best.
No, seriously, though, you've done a lot of awesome stuff. Why don't you introduce yourself to the audience who may not know you?
Okay, I'm Chris Hellman. I used to be, I am still a web developer for 20 years now, and I always wanted to drive the web in technologies, and especially in the interface for end users and all end users, independent of connectivity, independent of ability, independent of knowledge. And I've been working for Yahoo, and then I worked in Mozilla for a few years, and now I've been in Microsoft for a while. And what I've been mostly focusing in Microsoft is, first of all, killing Internet Explorer, and every web developer thanked me for that.
Nice.
And get a proper browser into the operating system, which the team did a really good job. And I got really excited when we started rolling out our cognitive services APIs, because I do a lot in making people aware that big data is a thing, that machine learning is a thing, and we're already past the point of being afraid of it. It's already happening.
Right.
So I want to make sure that we're using these technologies to build human interesting interfaces and understanding interfaces. And this is why I was very excited when we released the cognitive services here last year, or 2 years ago, actually. And we see more and more of these things coming. So I wanted to make sure today that we remind people that these services, and that's not only us, that's also IBM, that's also Google, that's also Amazon, that's also Facebook. All these people are realizing now that there is a benefit of allowing end users and developers to use machine learning without having to actually be a data scientist. And it's our job to make interfaces cater to the needs of our end users before they even know that they need them.
So, I mean, this is a fascinating, and you've said you've been a web developer for 20 years. I think if we go back to the history of the sort of UI and web development, let's talk about that, and then let's move on to how we can infuse AI into it. Because web development, maybe you can correct me here, but I feel like it hasn't changed that much as far as the technology we use, but the way we use it has changed significantly. What do you say?
I think both. I mean, there are standards, of course, which we luckily enough had. I remember when I started was Netscape 3 and Internet Explorer 4,
right.
And it was not a happy time. And
it was early. We were figuring stuff out.
I was young and I needed the money. And the technology standards are there, but the interactions are completely different, of course. Every new user that's coming out will come in one of these and not actually be on a desktop machine with a wired connection that is more or less stable.
Sure.
We have very unstable interactions. People are actually bad at typing things in. In the past, when the biggest problem that the web has right now is that we're accumulating lots and lots of data, and we're not making it readable. We're not making it understandable. So we actually take videos, we take pictures, but we don't put any alternative text in. We don't tag them. We don't describe them. I remember when I worked on Flickr, people were excited about tagging things. People were excited about finding their things by putting their own taxonomy in. And nobody does this nowadays. We just take picture and hope everything works out. And this is where photos of Google or also our photo system that we just showed shines, where we basically use deep learning and analysis of images and put that extra information that is very important for people who are who can't see, but it's also super important, of course, to find your own stuff. I've got about 15 gig of photos on my roll, and I can't find anything because I don't type anything in. But if I type in dog, it finds all the pictures of dogs without me having tagged it. And this is where the deep learning becomes interesting. This is the kind of interfaces I want people to think about. And when we showed the new cognitive services that we had yesterday, that you can now create a deep learning mesh from your own images just by uploading them.
Right.
This is so much easier than you had to do before if you had to go to an API and upload the photos and do all the coding yourself. Now everybody can make a very bespoke search interface for their images without having to know any API calls calling or getting an Azure account even.
So for a web developer, sometimes a web developer like myself might think, I'm a web developer, data science and machine learning is orthogonal to what I do. Explain some principles that we can do as web developers that will help us infuse this intelligence into our UI, because you spoke very eloquently about the need to do so. How do I do it? What are some things I can do, and how can the intelligence services help me?
I think, first of all, what you need to do is to understand that every input from the end user should need some guidance.
Okay.
So my favorite is signing up for something. I sign up for something, and I type in my password that I keep using or keep shifting around. I change it every week from the book that I'm reading at the moment. And then it tells me in the second or third step, oh, by the way, we demand your password to be in that format and that format. Instead of telling me upfront what it wants to do as a step that is in my way. You know, a lot of times we don't block the end user. We're trying not to block the end user, but we're actually allowing them to make really stupid mistakes that way.
Sure.
So what I want people to think more is like, what can you do with these services, which are just APIs that you can call in your background, to do that extra step for the end user? So when I drag and drop an image into the browser, it should automatically do an image analysis and show me the images of the thing. What do you want to be the background color in case the image can't get loaded? That would be one thing that I expect nowadays from an interface. The same way when I drag an image in, it should tell me like, hey, that's a picture of Steven. You already have tagged him. Shall I put this picture together with the other cluster that you have of Steven? Or sentiment analysis as well. You can drag the image in and say like, that's a happy person. Do you want to put the tag happy person on there as well? So these systems are available for us as APIs. And what I got really excited about right now was there was a startup called AI Poly, which has a neural network running on the device itself. So it's for blind people to look around and basically tells them what the camera is seeing at the moment as a thing. We had that as an API. And of course, there was latency because you had from the phone, you had to go to the server, get the image up there, get the data back, and that was just a horrible experience.
Yeah, of course.
But now with the Azure Edge IoT thing that we announced.
Yeah, exactly.
And also the database that you actually just, by putting your images in the database, you get all these tagging and information for free. So the next job for us as developers would be when we build an interface for a client to also build an interface that for the admins and for the moderators that gives this information to them. And by the way, we have this extra information for the images. Which one of those do you want to make searchable?
Right.
One thing that is really underused, and I got to get dark here for a moment, is the content moderator API. There's a few of them from other companies as well. I think this is one of the things we don't use enough. Nowadays, when you allow random upload of photos or videos on your website or your product, you're basically shot. You basically will have things humans should not see on your site. The content moderator API detects not only adult content, but it also has checksums of images that are known to be completely illegal that will be automatically deleted for you.
Now, is this something that's in part of Cognitive Services already?
Yes.
I had no idea. This is like everyone should be using this right now. Like seriously.
Because
like,
it's not only litigation. It's not only that you can get sued when something gets shown. It's first of all, these things should not be seen by any human. And secondly, if you hire people for moderating, we right now have Mental Health Week. Nobody should have to see this stuff. If we already know that these pictures are known to an intelligent service, the computer can look at them. The computer is not going to get depressed
it's
or annoyed about it.
It's not going to get tired. Yeah. It's not going to do overtime. You give it its power and it's good.
Yeah, and that's something that I think we should be considering much more. Every startup, every interface that we're doing right now is about collect as much data as possible. And I think it's time we put a more of a quality filter on top of that, because collecting is easy, but finding and making something sensible and interesting is a much more fascinating one. Another interesting demo is the videobreakdown.com
have. Absolutely amazing, amazing.
And that now is a plugin, as we saw yesterday, it's a plugin for PowerPoint, which makes me probably consider PowerPoint again because I'm a Keynote user. But it's just so amazing to see that with a deep learning and with comparing with millions of data sets, neither an image nor a video is a black box anymore like it used to be. We have insights into who speaks when, what kind of emotion they're having when they're speaking, and it's getting crazy at times what you can see. There's a startup called Liarbird.ai. What they allow you is to speak 5 minutes into a microphone, and then any text that you type in will be spoken by your voice.
Holy cow.
It's kind of creepy, but it's very, very interesting.
Have you used it? Does it sound like you?
I've used it. It sounds like me, which is, just broken English with a bit of German accent is fine. But I found it interesting, especially as my bank in England just allowed voice recognition as a login. So I'm like,
uh-oh.
So there we have an issue. But this is what Satya said in his keynote yesterday. Like, we have amazing power with these technologies. So it's up to us to actually bring the transparency in as well.
I see. So let me see if I understand. Because like, I love all the information. It feels like the principle you're giving me here is we should make our computers do the first right thing all the way and then let the users adjust after that. Like, for example, we should tell them beforehand, put in a good password and here's how you do it. We should automatically, if there's a picture that goes in, we should just look at it as a computer and do the right thing with it. It feels like there's a lot of right things we can do beforehand that we're forcing the users to do, and we can have intelligence take over. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, to a degree. Also quality enhancement as well.
I see.
I mean, there is there's the classic of like NCIS when you're like, oh, can you zoom into that one? That's a reflection on a hubcap of somebody's sunglasses and then we find
the license plate. I always make fun of that, but apparently there's technology that will do that now.
Yes, there's the super resolution. There's a white paper out which I tried to read and had lots of words in it, so I was confused.
Yes.
But then NVIDIA actually has it as part of their developer tools right now, that if you have a JPEG that's very blurry, it actually puts in the rest for you. It still looks kind of weird, but it actually flagging these errors up to people when they upload images and say, like, by the way, that's blurry, or by the way, this person has red eyes, should I automatically change that for you?
Right.
Is an interesting one to think about as well. Like, machines are very, very good in finding mistakes in things. So rather than us making these mistakes, it makes much more sense to actually have that as if our user, like, by the way, there's a problem, we fixed it for you. It's the same with IDEs. I mean, I went away from a text editor to Visual Studio Code because of the linting. I love that it tells me that I'm writing errors while I'm writing them and not like I have to run it and then get an error log and these kind of things. I became a better developer because the tools tell me, don't do that. That's stupid. What are you doing here right now?
Nice. And you're saying that we can make computers in any kind of interface, specifically since you come from the web, and that's what our interaction is now, we can allow the computers to actually help us do the right thing first.
Yeah. Think about logging in. I mean, like, we now in Edge, we now support the login systems of Windows, so you could actually talk to Windows Hello and let people just use their camera to log in. I'm already logged into my computer. I'm already logged into my phone. Why should I log in again to every website out there when I just could be able to get the credential chain from one to the other? I, as a maintainer of a website, do not want to have your information.
No, I don't.
I don't want to have this kind of responsibility. So if we could tap into what the operating system give us with biometric information, with fingerprints, with all kind of things from a web technology background, this is much easier than maintaining 10,000 login systems that will be hacked and are hacked every day.
Yeah, I have a friend in Australia, Troy Hunt, who every once in a while says, 500,000 passwords have been compromised.
Yeah, the have I been pound.com
website. That's right.
Website.
He writes,
yeah.
That's what he writes. And it's like, I don't want to store passwords. Our first approximation of storing passwords and usernames was, all right, let's hash them. But then that wasn't good enough. He showed me that you could take a regular unsalted hash, put it into Google, and it will tell you what the reverse is.
I think my favorite devious thing I've seen lately was a researcher that used reCAPTCHA from Google that gives you an audio capture if you can't see, you know, the distorted pictures. And he used that to the sound-to-text API from Google to crack captures. So actually, he used two APIs of Google to work against each other, and then it wasn't the same server, so there wasn't even a domain problem with that.
Oh my goodness!
But they fixed that problem. But it was hilarious that you can do these kind of things. But going back to the ethical part of it, we are collecting people's information. We should be at least nice enough to do something good for them with that information.
Sure.
And to tell them what happened. Terms and conditions are not enough. Nobody reads them.
No.
And I mean, Apple's terms and conditions say, like, you cannot use any of their hardware in nuclear weapons or in weapons of mass destruction. And I'm like, nobody ever found that out.
No, I mean, nobody told me.
Well, even better, you cannot give out their hardware as presents at a giveaway. That's another part of the terms and conditions.
Oh, whoops.
That nope, everybody violates. They don't care about. But yeah, nobody about terms and conditions are not good enough. We have to get people to understand that by giving information away to get free stuff, they're actually giving stuff away.
Yes.
We have to get people to be more cognizant about what they're doing online. Where right now, I'm very angry whenever somebody says everything is magical and just works.
Oh, yeah. That.
It doesn't. It's up to you to keep yourself safe. It's up to you to not put things online that will come and haunt you like 2 months later.
Sure.
And the only way we can do that is make more ethical interfaces that tell people, this is what we get from you, but this is what you get out of it. And here's an opt-out if necessary.
So we're kind of getting low on time. I want people that are watching to be able to have something that they can do. Like, what's an action item that a web developer or someone that makes these kind of interfaces, what is something they can do starting today, and then what can they do to orient themselves to the future of these kinds of things?
I mean, it sounds like a sales pitch, but we have a wonderful API for that. Go to Microsoft Cognitive Services, take a look at what they're doing. Take some of the companies that are using that on top of the Facebooks, Googles, and others. So sure. Cloudinary in Israel is a great company, for example, that automatically indexes all your photos, centers them on somebody's face, cuts out people when you do thumbnails rather than like making a thumbnail with a person this big.
Right.
It turns videos into text. Use the videobreakdown.com and also the video APIs that are by several companies, ImageX, Microsoft, everybody, to make, when you put video on the page, subtitle that, caption that, and sure. It can be done automatically nowadays. We cannot pretend that everybody is sighted, is on a fast connection, and on a great mobile phone. Make your interfaces much more human by doing these services in your build process, not in live on the site, because that is too heavy for mobile phones and connectivity, but do it when you're actually creating the site. And next time you're actually building a new interface, consider what will be easiest for you to do. Can I tap into a biometric of a mobile phone instead of creating yet another login system?
Right.
Can I allow the people to use their camera to actually look into it to upload a photo rather than like allowing needing them to drag and drop it onto it? Think about all the interfaces that make our interactions human, and you will have a much better time. And of course, you don't need to use our services. Google does great stuff, Facebook does great stuff, but make sure that actually you're thinking about it, because I work with a lot of people in the German government about jobs, and everybody's afraid of automation. We should be as well. Web development, especially predictable web development, where every website looks the same, can be done by AI already. There's companies like Wix.com and AIDA and these kind of things that create web pages for end users, and that's cool. I'm happy to get rid of my job and do something else if the technology that replaces it is that good.
Right.
I want people to publish stuff on the web. They don't need to pay me to write HTML for them. If they find a system that creates something amazing for them, wonderful.
So where can people go to find out more about you? Because I love the knowledge that you're laying down here. Where can people go? Do you have a blog? Do you have something that we can go and look to?
Yeah, I'm christianheilmann.com is my blog. I'm Code Poet on Twitter with an 8 at the end. And that's basically most of the channels where I am.
I love it. He's dropping the knowledge, folks. Thanks so much for spending some time with us, my friend. Thanks so much for watching. My name is Seth Juarez, Channel 9. We're at the Washington State Convention Center for the 2017 edition of Build. Thank you so much. I love the idea of making things better with intelligence and making the computer be intelligent. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. We'll see you.
Thank you.